Just before we start today, are you a teacher? Most listeners aren't, because we aim this show at students. But if you are an educator of some form, I just wanted to let you know that I'm co-authoring a special series this month on effective studying with this week's podcast guest, Peps McRae, for his famous ultra-concise, ultra-high-value Evidence Snacks email newsletter. In the three-part series we've put together, I'm sharing some of my all-time favourite tips and tricks that I've learned over the years to help embed smarter study strategies in your school, helping students study smarter, not harder, going beyond the research recommendations to figure out exactly what we need to be telling students to help them put good ideas into practice. In the email series, I'm even giving away some of my teaching resources so you can pick up some ready-to-teach lessons so you can deliver these ideas directly into your school. So you get slides, a little video, and even a workbook for your learners. Follow the link in the episode description to catch up on any emails in the series that you might have missed so far, and then sign up to Peps's Evidence Snacks email list to get the rest of the series delivered directly to your inbox. For everyone else listening, all my non-teacher friends studying hard for their exams at school, university and more, I just wanted to say, especially if your exams are coming up soon over the next few weeks, hang in there, my friends, keep going, you've got this. And now, here's today's episode.
Welcome to the Exam Study Expert Podcast, helping you ace your exams at school and university through the psychology of high performance and the science of studying smarter, not harder. It's my pleasure to introduce your host, the Cambridge-trained memory psychologist and exam success coach, William Wadsworth!
Hello and welcome to the Exam Study Expert Podcast. Today I want to talk to you about lists, a fantastic tool, I hope to convince you, for getting things done, staying in control and just generally running your life a bit better. Now, I'm aware it may be a lot to ask of some of you to get excited about a whole episode about lists. I mean, come on, a whole episode about lists? And I hear you, trust me. I think you'll find it worth your while. I'm going to be talking about seven different types of list formats, each with a different purpose in your world. The first three I'm going to talk about are pretty ubiquitously helpful to pretty much any student, or frankly, pretty much anyone. And then the final four I would consider more situational, with sort of specific purposes in helping you, for example, get the balance right between core interests and pursuing tangents, for helping you take the risk out of major moments like exams, and even for helping you figure out tough times and make progress, even when things are a little bit tricky in your life. So, without further ado, let's take a look and dive right into the first set of three lists I have for you today. Number one is the everything list. One of the most common struggles students ask me about is feeling overwhelmed, the challenge of juggling a large number of competing priorities. Part of the very thing that contributes to this feeling of overwhelm is the sheer mental burden of having to hold all your tasks when they're due, how to prioritize them, and like putting all that in your brain, having to hold all that just mentally. Like that puts such a strain on your, you know, thinking capacity each day. You may not really realize it, but, you know, if you are not using some kind of, you know, list or external store to store all that information, yeah, it's just those thoughts chase each other around your brain all day long. And, as a major contributor to feeling overwhelmed in the first place. So whether you're feeling overwhelmed or not, you will feel much clearer, calmer, and more productive if you're no longer having to mentally store all your tasks and priorities. Get those tasks and priorities out onto paper, or use a digital tool like Remember the Milk, as Dr. Frank Buck was talking about on the show just last week. The key here is being comprehensive in your list. So you may be thinking, well, sure, you know, I use a planner to record my class assignments, or I have a list of the things I need to study for my exams. But we want to make sure that everything list is comprehensive, fully comprehensive. Everything you need to do now, this week, this year, for your exams, for your classes, for your job, your career, or maybe applying for jobs, careers, internships, for your social world, for life admin, everything. We want to capture it all. The things you absolutely must do, the things you'd kind of like to do if you can find the time, everything. Now, you might want to put some loose structure into your list. So for me, I like to divide it between things I'm doing today, tomorrow, the following day, later in the week or next week, and then kind of as soon as possible, and then kind of later, a little bit later. But that's just me. You know, find what works for you. There's no right or wrong way to structure your everything list. The key, as I say, is to have some kind of external and comprehensive way of capturing everything you need to do. And I really liked Frank's tip from last week's conversation about having a daily ritual where you keep that list up to date, adding new items to it as necessary. Number two on the list of lists is today's priorities. So this one may not sound terribly revolutionary, but it was a relatively recent addition to my practice. And for me, it's just made such a big difference. Your today's priorities list is simply, what are your top priority tasks for today? It's a subset of your everything list. The everything list being your overall store of everything you need to do. But the today's priorities list breaks out, as the name suggests, what your priorities for today are. There may be also a couple of things that have just popped up that day that you needed to take care of too, and you haven't had a chance to add them to your everything list. So you just incorporate those into your today's priorities list as well. Now, here's the thing. Even if your everything list is totally clear about what you need to do today and there's nothing you'd add to it or change, I still find it very worthwhile just taking the moment to write out afresh what I'm planning to do today. It has to be done that day, that morning. And that simple act of starting your day by writing out your plan, listing out what you're going to do that day, is a really good way I've been finding to allow my brain to clear, stop fretting about what I'm doing or not doing today, which bits of my everything list I'm going to prioritize, and thereby making it much easier to focus and get work done without my brain constantly nagging me about whether I should be doing this task or that task. Writing out your today's priorities list at the start of the day also allows me to sequence what I want to do in a way that makes most sense for me once I know what my day is going to look like. So having the order right is helpful too. That removes decisions needed throughout the day on what I'm going to do next. I've already figured out a good order and I can move through the list smoothly. And finally, you're tapping into the psychology of intention setting. Because by writing out your plan at the start of the day, you're effectively setting an intention for what you want to get done that day. That's a very useful motivational tool. We use intention setting in all kinds of contexts when we're trying to get human behaviour to change. Classic examples being giving up smoking or other addictions. Intention setting here is being used to help us stay on task and get through what we want to do that day in our studies or our work. And I find fresh, in other words, that very day itself, and specific intention setting, so in other words, those very tasks I want to do that day, it's much more powerful than simply logging a task against a date several days or even weeks ago. You have to set that attention at the start of the day, I find, for it to have the biggest impact. So today's priorities list. It's a little thing that for me is making a huge difference, and I'd suggest having a go at it too. Number three is the someday maybe list. And you might consider this as a kind of a subsection of your everything list, but I find it important enough that it's sort of almost like a separate list of its in and of its own right. So what is the someday maybe list? Well, this is your repository for any of your kind of longer term, wouldn't it be cool if I did this kind of ideas? You know, visions, ideas, inspirations, thing might be things like, you know, where you put that idea to write that book or screenplay or launch that business venture or side hustle, build that tool or app, learn that language, maybe put books you want to read, places you want to visit, courses you want to take, all that kind of stuff that, you know, you're probably not going to get to it anytime soon, but you may do one day, someday, maybe, at least some of it. It's another way of keeping those longer term thoughts and ideas out of your brain so they don't keep nagging you. They're not cluttering up your mind day to day. And then you've got a separate repository for them. You know you've taken a record of them, so your brain doesn't need to worry that you constantly need to be thinking about those ideas. So between the everything list, today's priorities, and your someday maybe list, you should have most of your basic task management needs covered. Those are the core three lists I think most people would benefit from. The next four, the final four on my list of lists, are each a little more situational. So each have different uses to tackle different challenges. Let's take a look. The fourth one is the tangents list. So this is one I came up with myself over the past few years in response to a common question from coaching clients, especially those that are kind of at a more advanced level of scholarship. So typically at university or taking advanced exams or certifications as part of their career. The situation is characterized by having limited time and considerable scope of what you could potentially study for your exam or potentially investigate for your research work or written assignment. The situation is also characterized by the individual in question having, you know, quite a high level of intellectual curiosity. After all, there's a reason you got into this field and took it to such an advanced level. You know, you find it interesting. Now, the challenge is that you feel you're losing too much time going down rabbit holes or tangents. Your studying throws up some interesting angle or issue, and maybe something you feel you maybe it's something you feel you ought to know more about, or just something that piques your curiosity. Perhaps it's not kind of the most important or core material for your primary goal, succeeding in that exam or getting that assignment done. So spending too much time going down these deep dives needs to be, and you know, indulging that curiosity needs to be balanced against the need to spend sufficient time on your core material to make sure you actually, you know, do a good job in the exam or in the project. So the solution I came up with is called the tangents list. Each time your reading throws up something you want to investigate in more detail, you write it on your tangents list. Every time a tempting-looking rabbit hole gets spotted, you write that on your tangents list. You don't go down that rabbit hole right away, but rather you make time as part of your study routine to regularly review what's on your tangents list. Maybe it's an hour's slot at the end of the day, or maybe you take a couple of hours on a Saturday morning once a week. Whatever fits, whatever makes most sense for you and your routine. But then with only, say, that couple of hour slot per week to spend on all the tangents that came up that week, you need to be choosy. And so you only select perhaps the most compelling of those potential rabbit holes, the ones that you think will be most interesting or useful to dive down. You can't do them all and you don't have time, but you are at least doing some. And in this way, you achieve the balance between prioritizing most of your time as you should be doing on that core material that you definitely need to succeed in the exam or project, but you do also allow yourself at least a little time to explore around the edges. And by having that kind of that sort of distance between writing that item on the tangents list and then reviewing it whenever you choose on Saturday morning, for example, that extra little bit of distance and perspective allows you to be a little bit more objective, perhaps a little bit more selective, and pick out only the most interesting of those tangents or the most useful of those tangents to pursue. And then the others you can park for now as not being a priority. The fifth idea I've got for you is the checklist. I wrote an email to my email list subscribers about the checklist, which comes out on the same day as this episode. So if you're not on my email list and would like to get interesting emails from me from time to time about tips and tricks for your studies, you can join up at examstudyexpert.com/pillars, P-I-L-L-A-R-S, where you'll also get, as a welcome bonus, a handy little six pillars of exam success cheat sheet. So again, that's at examstudyexpert.com/pillars. So, checklists. As Atul Grawandi writes in his quite well-known book, The Checklist Manifesto, checklists are a way to reduce very, very small risks to functionally zero, or as close to zero as can ever possibly be hoped. Now, the difference between something happening very, very rarely versus not at all is a big deal, particularly in areas like medicine or airline safety. In these industries, a bad thing happening, even if it's very, very rare, can be literally a matter of life or death. And in both of these industries, there is now widespread use of checklists to reduce that risk from very, very rare to basically never, or as close as never to what you could possibly ever hope. Surgeons use checklists to make sure everything happens correctly in an operation. Pilots use checklists to make sure various aspects of plane maintenance or kind of flight routine are followed correctly. Even if in both of these cases the surgeon's performed that operation hundreds of times, or the pilot's flown that route and performed that set of checks hundreds of times, the checklist reduces the risk that, you know, that very, very rare case where, you know, human error means you miss something on your normal checklist, it reduces it all the way down to basically zero from being very, very rare, even for kind of experienced professionals. Now, forgetting some key bit of an exam kit isn't life or death, of course. It's not even in the same league, obviously, but it's still a bad event that could cause you to have a really bad day and could have some, you know, very unwelcome consequences for your world. Now, even if you can lay your hands on that spare calculator or whatever it is you've forgotten, or maybe do a flying visit to a local station route, or mitigate forgetting some other way, you'll still be flustered heading into that exam, which is not ideal. And if you can't get hold of a replacement for something you really, really need in that exam, it could have pretty serious consequences for how you're able to score on that paper. So, no matter how remote you think the chances of forgetting are, no matter how many exams you do, let's not leave those little details to chance. Use a checklist for key exam kit to reduce the chance of forgetting something from very, very rare to essentially zero. You can even apply checklists to different elements of the exam-taking process itself, from how you solve or respond to particular types of question to how you approach the checking process. If you're working on a written project, maybe you use checklists to check that you've got all the kind of key components in place for every chapter or section. If you are working in a lab context and you're performing experiments, maybe you use checklists to make sure everything's set up correctly, particularly if you're going to leave the experiment running several days and it would be massively inconvenient if you've made one small slip in how you set your experiment up that would negate the several days of running that experiment and make it worthless. So use checklists in any of these circumstances to bring that risk down from very, very rare that you forget something or miss something to basically zero. List out all the things you need to have in place, all the bits of kit you need, all the different steps to do in your experimental setup, even if you could do it blindfolded and you've done it a billion times before. Use that checklist to keep that risk as low as humanly possible. For more tips on life in the exam hall, you might consider checking out my exam technique book, Outsmart Your Exams, and the sister course that is now available called Exam Success Secrets, which, as with all of my programs, is included in your Study Smarter Network membership. See links in the show notes for more on those. In at number six is the mental resistance list. So I learned about the mental resistance list relatively recently from past podcast guest, the productivity guru Chris Bailey, and I instantly fell in love with the power and simplicity of this idea. So this one is about writing down a list of all the things you're feeling mental resistance to doing. The chances are these are some of the most important, impactful things you could be doing right now. When you can, and I'd suggest challenging yourself to make this happen on as many days as possible, start the day by crossing off one or more items from your mental resistance list. Or at least, if you can't cross off a whole thing from your list, at least make some progress on it. Maybe have a goal, for example, of spending the first hour of each day working on something from your mental resistance list to push it forward before getting on with other things you want to do that day. This kind of ties in quite well to the eat the frog tactic. You can see episode 39 with Brian Tracy, the kind of popularizer of the Eat the Frog tactic. The Eat the Frog tactic is where you start the day by doing your hardest or most off-putting task, i.e. eating your frog for the day, as Brian coined the idea, coined the term. But I prefer Chris's version for me, because it acknowledges that there may be actually quite a lot of frogs. And you know, you can't just start, it's not as simple as there's just one and you do that at the start of your day. Or even that you can do the one and then the next one and then the next one. And then that's how you kind of put your day in order of the most aversive tasks and do all your frogs at the start of the day. Like, I, you know, in any one time, I could spend 2 weeks just constantly doing nothing but eating frogs and I wouldn't get through all the frogs on my list, all the items on my mental resistance list. And so what Chris's kind of approach allows me to recognize is that I got a lot of frogs. There are a whole set of things that I'm having mental resistance to. And I can, in effect, have that realistic goal to tackle even if it's not a whole item from that list, at least make progress on an item from that list as part of each day. So I think that's a really, you know, that's, for me, that's been a really helpful thing. And it's probably worth saying, if you've been enjoying the podcast this year, dear listener, then you yourself are directly benefiting from the mental resistance list tactic in action. Because for ages, it's funny, but like I've had a hang up about reaching out to good potential guests to interview for the show. And it's just something I always procrastinate on. You know, I do it and I've, you know, had guests on the show, but you know, it's been probably more than most other things, been one item on my, long running to-do list on my everything list, that has just had a big like mental resistance to it. So just the act of kind of writing my mental resistance list and recognizing my shortcomings in this area, for example, of getting the invites out to potential guests has been quite helpful in helping me get the invites flowing again. And I've been getting more invites out than I have in a long time. And I hope you've been appreciating the results. And you know, we've had some great guests recently, recent conversations, the likes of Dr. Frank Buck last week or Matt Zagreski a couple of weeks ago, for instance, some great conversations. You know, I hope you've been enjoying the results. And there is lots more to come. We have some fantastic conversations coming up over the next few months for you. So mental resistance list. I hope you find this useful tip as I've done. Finally, number 7 is the red and green list. This one's perfect if you're having a tricky time, possibly because of health challenges, be they physical or mental. Generally, something is happening in your world that is making it particularly difficult to make progress. So what you do is separate your to-do list, your everything list, into green items. Those that are easy, friendly, doable might be things like admin, filing, buying more pens, things that you don't feel even the slightest bit of mental resistance to, versus red list items, those that are a little bit more daunting. And if you can't currently face the reds, that's okay. Let's start by working through some of the green items until a day comes along when you start to feel strong enough to try a red. And in this way, we can start to at least make a little bit of progress on some of those green items in the meantime, with the intention of building up towards maybe tackling a red when we feel ready. And there we have it, folks, the 7 handy types of list to help you get more done, stay on track, prioritize what matters, and generally keep you on the straight and narrow. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I just want to wish you every success, as always, in your studies.
If you've got exams coming up, you can now get all of William's favourite tips and tricks to save you time and get you higher grades, all in one handy cheat sheet. Grab your copy at examstudyexpert.com/free tips. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.